Well, thanks again, Emmanuel, for joining us. We do appreciate it. It's great to dive into, just the world of AI and broadly across the industry, and then what Sanofi is doing as well. So I appreciate the time. So Sanofi has talked openly about, going all in, right? All in on AI. But there are many pharma companies still sort of struggle to move beyond pilots and proof of concept, sort of approaches. From your perspective, what separates, companies that are truly becoming AI native, right? From those simply just kind of layering AI tools or just, still kind of going through the pilot process? What differentiates those approaches?
Well, thanks for having me today. Really appreciate the connection and the conversation. I think it's an important topic. Our industry, Sanofi is a pharmaceutical company. So our industry doesn't have the benefit of not doing great for patients. And so we'll use every trick at our disposal. And AI is one of the great capabilities that we will use to improve people's lives because there's so many diseases that are known but don't have a treatment yet. So it'd be a shame not to be able to take it. So all in means that we'll go all in for patients and we'll use artificial intelligence for it. The question was, how do we make it something that is truly not a pilot or a proof of concept, which you see a lot of, but at scale? And so we've used a number of ways to go about it. The first one is we spend a lot of time educating our internal employees. We spend considerable amount of time upskilling them, training them. And let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Every year, for about a month of the year, we call it Digital Months. It's April. It starts on April Fool's Day, but it happens to be very serious. And for a whole month, we do workshops, seminars, we bring external speakers, we do hands-on practical labs. And so we just concluded April 2026, and we had 44,370 participants into the event. Sanofi is about 74,000 people, including people that are manufacturing and sales teams that are on the road. So it's not easy for them to necessarily access that. So it tells you how much of a penetration we have of the mindset of curiosity, willingness to learn, willingness to just get your hands dirty in the company. I think that's the number one, I think, element of a successful AI scaling is the people adopting it and the people feeling that they are able to use it and if they own it. I would say it starts with that. And then, of course, you've got to find the right topics. You can't just, we say we're all in, we're actually all in on selective topics. We select areas where we want to go deep in AI. You have two schools of thought almost that are conflicting at the moment. There's the school of thought of let a thousand flowers bloom. So try a ton of things and let's see what works. And we are the school of thought of the acorn becomes the oak. Just let's take a few areas, go truly deep, transform the company, transform the way we work, and that becomes something very meaningful, as the metaphor says, an oak. And so that's our school. So we've selected a few specific areas where we went all in.
You describe AI in, multiple layers, right? From specialized AI in manufacturing and drug discovery to, generative AI and AI concierge sort of systems. How do you think about balancing operational efficiency gains with a much larger strategic opportunity through AI and, fundamentally changing how medicines are developed and discovered? How do you combine those two?
We did the approach of categorizing AI at the beginning to try to make it a bit simpler for ourselves. So we had those three categories of AI that you mentioned. We called it the snackable AI, the one that's accessible to everybody, the one that is easy to use. Think of Instagram of AI. Something simple, you can get a snapshot of information, you can get a recommendation right there at your fingertips. And then we had the specialized AI, you mentioned that as well, the one that you see that it pertains to a specific kind of job. We see it in our manufacturing, for example, quality. There's AI that looks at the quality of manufacturing, the defect, the deviations, and does recommendation. We have AI that does it for our scientists. We've got an entire, we call it lab AI, an entire lab companion that tells you which experiment you should run in which order. And by the way, you should not run this experiment because we ran it in the past and here are the results of the experiment. And then you've got generative AI, which we've seen an explosion. It's everybody thinks generative AI is the only AI nowadays. It's a kind of AI. It's a very easy to use kind of AI as a consumer of it. And that's what we've done with Concierge. So Concierge, if you want, is our companion. Concierge, as we named it, is similar to the concierge of a hotel. You know, you go to Concierge to ask questions about the environment, you ask questions, recommendations, where should we go and eat? And Concierge for us at Sanofi understands every Sanofi policy, understands who you are in the context of the company, understands where you're based, understands your job. And so we wanted to make it truly a companion for every employee, a use case that applies to everybody and scales across the company. And then you got to look at how you prioritize other elements of AI deployment based on the return. And there is, I think, there's two views at the moment. There's the view that AI is here to automate and simplify and potentially reduce certain activities. Okay, that I can believe that. And then there's the AI that I'm more of a believer of that can create new opportunities, growth, top line growth, new discoveries, new ways of working that are less about the efficiency in terms of cost efficiency, much more about changing the processes. And so I'm a big believer of AI is not for automation. I think it's a misuse. AI is for reinvention. With AI, you can really reinvent the way you do things. So we are reinventing the way we do clinical trials with AI. And not just us, we use partners as well, so we don't do everything alone. At Sanofi, we don't have the arrogance to think that we know it all. We partner with lots of very smart startups and companies that come and challenge us and complement us. But as an example, we're now working with a company called Quant Health. We simulate every clinical trial, phase one, phase two, phase three, before we even do them. And that simulation allows us to be far more accurate in the kind of profiles of patients we need to have, the volumes of patients, maybe the distribution by geography, the time duration, even reduce the size of your placebo arm. That's to me AI as a reinvention. We never did that before. We couldn't do it. We had no means to do that. Now with AI, we have the means to do that. So you can see that in the clinical cycle, we'll do it. In the commercial cycle, we'll do it. We are releasing an AI companion for all our sales, we call it our field force in North America, which will completely change the way they interact.
Is that where you see the biggest gains that could be realized in the sales area, more so than clinical development? Is it you're looking at the sales commercialization aspect?
I see gains in many areas. I
Okay.
see gains in inventing new molecules and making them to be sound. I see more ranges in terms of molecule design that you would have. You'd be able to do 100 of those molecules, but then with 100 molecules going and manufacturing them and testing them is a lot of work. So I see gains as well in filtering those. Those that will have good binding affinity with the target, those won't have such a good binding affinity. And then I see gains in the next phase, which is toxicology. You know, are those molecules that I now have generated, have they got a toxic profile? And in that case, you know, it's not something. So I see gains in all that area, discovery, molecule design, target identification, all these I see gains. But they're long-term gains. You know, in our industry, that cycle is very lengthy. And so I see the gains, but they may materialize in a few years. I see more immediate gains in designing any clinical trial completely differently, be more optimal, having the better representation of participants into that trial, the better markets. That is more immediate. And so I think there is a difference in terms of longer-term gains, mid to long-term gains versus more immediate gains. Sure, commercial, manufacturing, and clinical, those three have more immediacy. Research will have more of a mid to long-term gain, but I do see gains in all of them.
What about supply chain operations? There should be some benefits there, obviously, right?
100%, 100%. You mentioned supply chain, but let me go before, and then we'll go back to supply chain. So we manufacture a number of drugs at Sanofi. Our most successful drug today is a drug called Dupixent, which is a biologic, which means there are cells that you have to grow and multiply in bioreactors, so in big kind of soup kitchens, if you want, in a manufacturing plant, highly sterile. But because they're cells, they're living organisms. And cells, don't multiply at the same rate each time. There's elements of those cells that they behave differently. Temperature, what you feed them, the cycle, the movement, how much you stir them. And so we developed an AI that is a yield management AI that looks at all the telemetry and tells you this batch will not yield your golden ticket, which is the X number of liters you're hoping to yield. And if you adjust the following things, you will get to it, or you might get close to it. That's important because that goes to upwards of supply chain. We minimize the volume of production that we need for a higher volume of output. So we see in the factory at the manufacturing time for biologics being critical. But then on supply chain, I think we can all admit that the world has become a little bit more complicated in the past few years, and supply chain is massively disrupted by the cost of transportation nowadays. The cost of fuel is changing. So be able to anticipate needs, but also figure out what substitutes we could have in there, including with partners and connecting the network of partners. I see AI playing a tremendous role here today. We partner with some companies in there, a company called BlueCrux, which gives us visibility into the end-to-end supply chain. And it's quite phenomenal what you can see in terms of potential disruptions that you can anticipate, but also alternatives if you have the disruption.
How about from the there's kind of regulatory considerations as you're talking about scaling AI into, like you're saying, clinical development, supply chain, commercialization, all these aspects. You're of course leading this charge. How are you approaching the governance sort of things, trust, and what you've called responsible AI when these decisions impact patient outcomes, right? So how do you approach that?
That's an excellent question. And so we can never compromise for patients. What we do in terms of how we manufacture, the quality, all these elements, there's never a compromise on anything that we do for patients. And artificial intelligence has to have a human in the loop almost at all times. And we've got inspired by many others, but we created our own framework. We call it RAISE, Responsible AI for Everyone at Sanofi. And we've made it public. It's on our sanofi.com website. Anyone can go and look at it. And basically, it has the tenets that you would expect. One of them is trust, explainability of the AI, which can be difficult in a world with LLMs. Don't always the chain of thought is not always fully understood. So we partner with companies like Weights and Biases to be able to go and analyze our thought process. But also looks at things like avoiding biases, ensuring it's eco-friendly, that is replicable, that we can do it. All these elements are extremely important, and they're important because we want to stand by the decisions and recommendations that AI does that ultimately a human validates. And we also want to make sure that anyone in the company that uses AI feels like it's gone through a process of validation. It's not just something that you purchased, a black box kind of a magical algorithm that you purchased that suddenly makes you think that, hey, it works. I don't know how it works, but let's hope it always works. Now, there's a lot of areas where we don't have patient interactions with AI. So, for example, content creation. We can create content for marketing, for advertising, for promotional. That I think the risk profile is less, and therefore you can do more things. You can be more creative. You can try more variants of things. So I think the way we look at it is when it has a patient impact, never a single compromise. What is distinct to be internally as well? We do a lot of things now internally, messages that we craft for our employees, for you probably can take a lot more leeway and allow a little bit more of creativity and autonomy in the AI. But what's important is to distinguish what you're going to do where. And what is really important is what you were saying is having that governance in place. So we created an AI board at Sanofi. Pretty much every AI use case that is meaningful, impactful, that can have a change, a consequence, goes to an AI board, which is co-chaired by our Chief Financial Officer and myself. And we review all those use cases, not so much from a value perspective, it's less about how much they will yield, much more about do they make sense? Do they respond to our aspirations? Are they ethical? All these elements come as part of that review. So I think that you've put the finger on something important. AI without governance runs the risk of becoming chaos. And imagine a world where you have thousands of agents in autonomy that nobody monitors in your company doing things every day. There's a risk that one of those agents could go rogue or do something incorrect, and if nobody's checking on that. And so we've made sure that every AI agent that we have is registered. There's a central registry. We understand what they're doing. We understand the objective of this AI agent. We understand the payload, the guardrails for it, and that's searchable. And anyone who's going to develop an agent should first search in the catalog to see if one exists. And then if it already exists, you reuse it. And if you're going to create a new one, you're going to go through a registration process for that agent to ensure that we have clear governance.
You have to go through those safeguards, certainly. And you mentioned that you have tens, right? Tens of thousands of employees using internally, right? Using AI tools. What have you learned from that aspect internally, scaling at a level without necessarily overwhelming teams or creating, what is it they call like tool fatigue across the road? How do you kind of manage that?
I think we hit a bit of luck as well. So there's a soul process what we did, and there's a bit of luck that in everything that goes in life, as I'm sure you appreciate. We didn't want to be somebody that would license an existing AI model and just make it available to our employees. We wanted to do something a little bit different, and we wanted to be something where we told our employees, go and test it out. Really try to, I even said last month, try to break it. To tell them that there's nothing wrong you can do with it. And I think what we've tried to encourage is curiosity. Try things you never thought of. And recently I was waiting for to board a plane, to board a flight, and there was a CFO for one of our big divisions next to me. And we were queuing, and you get to chat. And he was saying to me, "Listen, Emmanuel, this concierge, I used it in ways I had not expected before." So, what? Tell me more. What are you doing with it? Said, "Before we acquire a company, we have to do a due diligence. I put all my documents in concierge, and we know it's secured. So we've secured the environment. There's cybersecurity around it, and it's a private environment. I put everything in concierge, which is based on Anthropic's Claude model." A number of Anthropic's Claude model. And then I ask concierge questions about due diligence. So I tell him to tell me what it sees from the data. That was great. So far, nothing unusual. But then he said, "I tell concierge to give me the questions to ask the companies we're targeting to acquire. So when I meet the management team, I want to be able to have the questions to ask. So concierge gives me the 5 to 10 questions I should ask." And those are very predictable questions. Where you see your financial trajectory, when you see the product's going to get to market, how many patients are you going to have for this product, et cetera. So that's kind of traditional, and they expect those questions, and those teams are very well trained. But then I do something different. I said to concierge, "Please tell me what are the 5 questions they would never expect me to ask." And so I twisted, and I thought that was elegant because I wouldn't have thought about that, but that's his curiosity that allowed him to try something new. And he said, "Every time I do that, they're stumped. I can see how they behave. I can see how they react because they're super trained. When you're selling a company, you're super trained. Those teams are ready to sell, so they've rehearsed everything. But now I've got my 5 oddball questions that really throws them off, and now I see how they react as a team. I can test back hypotheses of facts before." It's a long answer to your question, but it's to say that you have to have some sort of a toy chest, if you want, for your employees to go and try things. In concierge, they can create imagery. They can take pictures of meeting notes and have them transcribed. They can create their performance reviews. They can look at creating presentations inside concierge. You can create a slide deck. We give them enough toys, and maybe toy is not the right word, but I don't want to call it tools, but enough capabilities in there for them to try things. And then we don't judge. And we created a community around concierge, about 1,500 people that contribute to it, of people that exchange. So there is no real digital support. It's a self-sustained organization supporting it. So my answer would be, find something that will be so pervasive that everybody will use it, that is a common denominator for the company. That's how you start a change. Not specialized tools that may be in the hands of a researcher, or in the hands of a manufacturer, or in the hands of a commercial lead. Those are important too. But find something that unifies the company. And that's, I think, how you initiate the change, the scaling in a company with 74,000 people like we have.
I did want to ask you if you had a few minutes about sort of how you manage the integration of your AI centers of excellence, right?
Yeah.
They kind of span globally. You had a recent expansion, right, in Toronto?
Yes. You know, our life purpose is to finding new miracles, which are new drugs, new molecules for patients. That's our life purpose. But more and more, every industry has become more tech savvy. And we have to become more tech savvy as well, more AI savvy, more tech savvy, more depth to what we do. And so we created about 4 years ago, we created a center of excellence, 5 years ago, a center of excellence in Toronto, an AI center of excellence of Toronto, because we felt that it was real good talent in Toronto that we could tap into. There's a rich background of universities and a feeder of talent. And then we created accelerators in France, in Paris, and in Lyon. And they're similar and they have different objectives. And so the accelerators are designed, Concierge, which I made a reference, was designed and built inside the accelerator. It's a way of working like you would see in a tech startup. It's slightly outside of the company. So it has the freedom of operation. It's the kind of profiles you'll find in a startup. You will meet them, product owners, data scientists, data engineers, software developers, and they work together solving problems. And so we have an accelerator for commercial, we have an accelerator for R&D, an accelerator for manufacturing and supply, where they create specific solutions tailored for those needs. And then we have the AI Center of Excellence in Toronto, which you rightfully said we've announced some enhancements of it. We committed to hiring 50 more roles in Toronto in the AI Center of Excellence in the coming years in Toronto to add to another already 150 people that we have there. So we're making a real commitment saying there's gravitas in Toronto for us. There's scaling in Toronto for us. And all these, they're complementary. They work very similarly and they are joined at the hip. Our accelerators and our AI Center of Excellence depend on each other and they work on common solutions. But we have more depth of AI expertise in Toronto today, data and AI expertise. And we are very, I think, fortunate that we are able to build such a strong team there.
So as you scale these, you scale up these global hubs, AI hubs, what capabilities or kind of skill sets are becoming most critical that you're looking for more, or, just for the skills in those areas, but in the leadership roles that are involved in those areas as well, what skills do you see as being critical?
I suspect most people would answer to that question. They want mathematicians, they want software engineers, they want we want critical thinkers. I think that's our first desire. We want people that are willing to learn because I think we've got to be all honest with ourselves. It's evolving so fast. The pace of innovation is so extraordinary. The funding going into the tech industry and AI specifically is so incredible that you're bound to have innovation, and none of us can understand all of the innovation is taking place. So you need people that have critical thinking and that come to the company. Curiosity, critical thinking, and that they want to be good collaborators. We don't welcome jerks. We want welcome people that want to work in teams and collaborate together. And then, of course, there are certain expertise that are wanted, data expertise. The world is changing so much on the data spectrum. I think we often speak of AI as if it's a accomplished thing, but AI without data, without context, doesn't work. I mean, with the old expression of garbage in, garbage out is still true in 2026. So expertise around data, around governance of data, how you engage the business in terms of ownership of the data, ensuring that you have a life cycle of your data. It really, we want to have a continuum of our data across the enterprise. Those are profiles that are hard to find today, and we nurture them. And they're not always seen as in the light, in the daylight, these profiles, because they tend to be a little bit of the hidden realities of AI. Of course, we have data scientist profile, we have software engineer profiles, we've got, but we also have what I call the mini CEOs of digital, if you want, product owners. Those profiles are the people that really are able to set a vision for the product, engage the team, engage the business, measure the performance, iterate on it very fast, ensure that we deliver against the outcomes, the KPIs that we have set ourselves, or pivot, because you've got to pivot when it doesn't work. And those are also profiles. And those tend to be a mix of creatives, tech people, non-tech people, business people, but that's also a role type that we nurture. We actually have specific training for our product owners that we're doing, and we want to make sure that they're the best product owners out there. One of my ambition is that people see Sanofi as a talent magnet, that they want to get to Sanofi because we have talent, but they work so well here that they don't not interested by going outside of the company. And so we have to have the best possible talents and stretch them, make them grow in a way that I think others are not necessarily doing.
And you have to kind of reinforce that message too that you hear out there with the good companies like yourselves that AI is, it's not replacing human capability, right? It's most effective when it augments it. How do you in your role, how do you kind of define that balance, right, between a machine driven insight and human still that human scientific judgment, right? How do you balance that?
I think we all have to be a little bit honest with ourselves. There is a level of fear that is growing and threat that is growing. Because if you think about the two elements, physical AI and digital AI, those two, the concept of robotics and far more intelligent and far more capable robotics, including those supermodels that are becoming so now capable. I think everybody has a moment where there's a bit of doubt that is creeping in. Reality, if you look at the studies that were published in the past few weeks, today there's no, I don't believe there's job elimination to AI. I don't, and I could be proven wrong, but I don't believe at this stage there is a massive change in roles. Now, some roles will evolve for sure. We see now how voice-activated AI is so capable. You could imagine that call centers will change quite dramatically. And if you could resolve something at 3 o'clock in the morning through AI when you're having a problem with your bank, why not? It's unlikely that you'll have a call center at that time of the day, or so I can see value in there. When you look at the role, you've got to look at the activities, the tasks that are accomplished by a role. I don't think AI today is capable of removing completely an entire role, maybe tasks of that role. And how do we accompany humans? Because that's us. We have to accompany ourselves. If you have kids, you have to think about that as well. How do we accompany our employees, our family members, our kids, our spouses, our partners, to be able to take advantage of what AI provides you, eliminating some of those tasks that you could eliminate so that you can focus on higher value tasks? Let me give you an example, creating dashboards. I think my hypothesis is that today we create a lot of dashboards. When you track a company performance, there's thousands of dashboards in the company, some sort of report. You've seen them with bar charts, pie charts, and anomaly detection and all this stuff. So the job of creating those dashboards is going to go away because now it's going to be an individual question of the data. You will ask the question of the data you want to know. Rather than having a set view of what the data should tell you, you're going to say, hey, I have a question, I want to ask it, and I will ask it in a conversational way. That job is changing. But then focusing on truly what is moving the company, truly what is having impact, those I think are important. And people that create dashboards will no longer create dashboards, they will create true insights. Rather than give you a pane of glass of a view of KPIs, they'll give you the insight and maybe the correlation, and they'll use AI to do that. And the so what? Because a lot of what we do today is here it is. There's no so what. But I'm of the view, I'm an optimist by nature. I think AI is a true revolution, industrial revolution. The difference with this one is the pace is much, much faster than anything else we've experienced before. Manufacturing revolution was at a much a slower pace. This one is at a frantic pace, but it creates new opportunities to do things we couldn't do before. And so job displacement will happen in certain jobs, for sure. We shouldn't say never. But I think it's more task displacement, activity displacement at this stage. And then we have to be able to learn to upskill ourselves, take advantage of it to do things differently.
Yeah, makes sense. I appreciate those insights there. I was curious about your kind of perspective from your background in consumer digital, right, with Disney and the likes, where right, user adoption and speed were kind of core. How was that kind of experience in some of your earlier roles? How has that shaped like your cultural mindset and your operating mindset when you're trying to build like this AI kind of arm and approach? inside, a global big pharma company. I was just kind of curious about that.
Interesting. So when I joined Sanofi, I thought what I did in my career at Disney and at iFlix, a startup in Asia that we built a few years ago, was about providing entertainment. And I saw that entertainment was a very noble mechanism of escapism. We all live difficult lives, and so enjoying entertainment, those whatever it be, that 90 minutes that nowadays we're more into short form, but the 90 minutes of escapism was, I think, a very noble thing. And but it's nothing like contributing to patients' outcome improvements. So I joined this industry because I saw that I could take my experience, as you rightfully said, in the consumer-facing world, fast, iterative consumer, into the patient world. What could I do to improve patients? And we do it. We've got apps that we build for some of our patients that improve adherence, improve onboarding, reduce some. One of our treatments is an injectable, so you have to self-inject. Imagine you've never injected yourself, self-injectable. There's a barrier of entry. We try to make that so much easier for patients, and we see it transforms into better outcomes for patients. And so that's, I think, it's important. But in parallel, I don't know about you, but I can tell you that I've recently used Claude to help me interpret an MRI result I had and give me what I saw the treatment was before I went to see a physician. And I did it because what do I have to lose? Here's my MRI. My appointment is in a couple of weeks because, it can be tedious to find an appointment these days. Why not? And I think the consumerization of healthcare is happening at an incredibly fast pace. And now you have for a long time, you had Dr. Google. Nowadays, you've got a Dr. Claude, ChatGPT, you name it. You've got those doctors, and you're using them in your daily life. And so I think our industry has a responsibility to be able to educate that part of the system. We have to evolve as well. We have to make sure that if you're going to turn to one of those foundation models to get better healthcare advice, we need to make sure that we feed it the right level of information. And the world is fed from not always the right level of information. There's enough disinformation out there that you could pollute those models. So I think we've got a consumer play, if you want, in our industry that is happening at rapid pace. Doctors are consumers, they're patients themselves, patients are parents, they're caregivers, they're all that element of connectivity exists. And in need, people like, at least like me, will turn to those models for questions, for suggestions, for maybe even a diet plan. My son has built his workout plan for them. So I think it's a natural evolution of where we're headed. And so my experience from the past hopefully will carry me to the next wave into the future.
Yeah, interesting. Did you sort of see it like 5, 8 years ago? Did you see it evolving this way in healthcare or?
I saw consumerization evolve, but had not seen, no, if I told you that 8 years ago I had seen generative AI coming to the scale, I would be misleading you. I did not. The moment it arrived, though, I saw this is game changing because it makes it so much easier now for anyone to interrogate a source of knowledge. And that simplicity is why it's so adopted, is why it's so easy to use. Even Google, if you remember, if you still search on Google, you get a bunch of results and you have to go and filter and you have to go and look at themselves and qualify the information. Now you don't really do that. You go straight to a Perplexity or something like that, and you just make those questions and you iterate. You say, well, I don't know if that's the right answer. Can you no longer yourself searching the data. Search was the way to get to users. Now it's synopsis. It's content really that gets to users. So we've moved away from search into very much of a content, a synopsis kind of
Did that
world.
help kind of build your internal engines as well?
I think it builds a narrative as well for ourselves to train our internal employees. They see the evolution because themselves are consumers. If I go back 10 years, expert AI was more in the hands of as we said, experts. So people that saw predictive models and things like that, you would have it. But it wasn't necessarily accessible to everybody. Today, AI is accessible to everybody. And I think that changes as well the way the whole company understands where this is headed. It's not just a small group of people that's saying this is where it's headed. I think it's everybody that sees where it's headed is how now you organize the company to go to that direction.